Support for OPB comes from our members and from our sponsors, like Tracy Ray from the employment law firm of Baron Liebman. Tracy says that OPB sponsorship is a great way to support the community and connect with Baron Liebman's clients.
It's OPB Politics Now for Friday, March 22nd. We've talked a lot on this podcast recently about what happened last legislative session. We've covered the housing issues, the push to make illicit drugs illegal again, and the changes made on the campaign contribution front. Today, we're going to talk about what didn't happen, and that entails quite a bit on the environmental front, from policies around wildfires, farms, and climate change, all of which were pushed to the back burner. Welcome to the podcast. I'm OPB politics reporter Lauren Dake.
And I'm environmental policies reporter April Ehrlich.
And I'm food and agriculture reporter Alejandro Figueroa.
April, let's start with you. You have covered a lot about wildfires, people who lost their home in wildfires, wildfire funding. Those issues really took center stage in Salem after the 2020 Labor Day fires that devastated a big part of this state. But this session, there were a lot of bills meant to help Oregonians prepare to fight wildfires that just didn't get enough support to pass. Can you give us the rundown?
Yeah, so lawmakers proposed a few options for covering wildfire costs, and none of them passed. So right now, the cost of basic wildfire protection on lands that aren't owned by the federal government is split between the general fund and timber landowners, who have to pay a per-acre fee. And those per-acre rates increase as fires become more expensive. And landowners say it's becoming impossible for them to bear these costs. House Bill 4133 would have changed up that funding mechanism. It would have decreased those fees that timber landowners have to pay for fire protection, and it would have increased the state's current timber tax to account for inflation. That bill had the support of Governor Tina Kotek, but ultimately died. It did progress a lot farther than the other wildfire funding bills, like Senate Bill 1593, which would have restored the state's severance tax. That's a tax on the value of raw timber harvested from private lands, which Oregon used to have until the 1990s when it got rid of the severance tax for all but the smallest timber owners. Another bill that didn't make it very far would have asked voters if they wanted to increase property taxes to pay for fire and other public safety costs. And lastly, there was a bill that would have helped homeowners pay for upgrades to make their lands and homes more fire resilient, whether through landscaping or building upgrades. That bill also died. So the state does have a program that gives homeowners up to $250 for wildfire upgrades, which if you've ever made any improvements on your home, you know that $250 is just a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, that doesn't go very far. There is a concern that without more reliable funding for state wildfires, the state's going to keep facing bigger, more expensive fires. We are now facing the 2024 wildfire season. Where does this leave us for this summer, and do we anticipate some of these bills will be back in the 2025 session?
Yeah, I mean, that's hard to say as far as the summer goes. The Oregon Department of Forestry starts off every year with a big pot of money that's enough to cover a relatively mild wildfire season. So it depends on whether we get hit with any major fires this year. Weather-wise, there is a chance we could have a milder than usual summer as we transition into La Niña. That's when ocean surface temperatures cool down, usually resulting in cooler temperatures on land. Even so, climate change is causing extreme weather events that often take us by surprise. If we end up having an active fire season and the state exceeds its wildfire budget, which it often does, then it needs to pull money from other places, usually the general fund. So from what I've been hearing in public meetings, state officials are concerned about what the future holds. They say that the way the state funds wildfires and forest management altogether just isn't working. Senator Jeff Golden has been especially vocal about this. He represents the Rogue Valley in southern Oregon, where wildfires destroyed thousands of homes in 2020. He spoke at a public hearing in favor of HB 4133, that bill that would have decreased landowners' fees and increased timber taxes.
So the question becomes, you know, should we be looking to Oregonians generally to bear more of the cost, or particularly the industry whose lands are protected to bear more of the cost? I'm pretty positive that the answer to that question is yes. It's going to take both. The amounts we need are going to take both.
Remember that the state's wildfire budgeting structure is super complicated, and it's hard to get public support for something that most people don't understand. And we also haven't had a wildfire season as bad as 2020. And I mean, you all know this, but I was living in Talent when the Alameda fire destroyed like 2,600 homes in southern Oregon, including the ones across the street from my house. For a year, I lived in this post-apocalyptic neighborhood, just burnt trees and ash and hollowed out cars. I ultimately decided to leave, and now I live here in Portland, and already I feel very removed from that world. But so many Oregonians are still living with these scars. Honestly, it seems impossible for lawmakers not to revisit this again next session, especially if we end up having a bad wildfire season this year.
They did pass one bill that tries to lessen the burden on wildfire survivors. Tell us what that was, and I'm really curious what you think. Will that actually help people?
Yeah, so that was Senate Bill 1520. That makes it so wildfire survivors don't have to pay a state income tax when they win settlements and wildfire lawsuits. For instance, when investigators determine a fire was caused by a utility company's equipment, people impacted by that fire might sue the company and win a settlement. Oregon usually taxes all sources of income, even lawsuit settlements. But this bill eliminates the income tax specifically for wildfire lawsuits. It only applies to wildfires that were declared a disaster by state or federal agencies, and it is retroactive going back to 2018. So, for instance, it could potentially benefit the 17 homeowners who won the $90 million settlement against PacifiCorp earlier this year. In terms of how much it helps generally, I'm sure it's nice for the people who win settlements, but in terms of scope, it doesn't do a whole lot for the state. Remember that the 2020 wildfires destroyed 5,000 homes across Oregon. It upended people's lives, and only a few dozen people have won settlements in wildfire lawsuits from that year.
Let's switch gears. Alejandro, you covered a lot of the farming issues that happened this session. There was a big debate in the legislature around canola production in the Willamette Valley. This is something that's been going on for a long time, but could you outline what happened this session?
Yeah. So first, let's make sure we're talking about what canola is. So you've probably heard about canola oil, right? So that's what we're talking about here. The crop grown for its seed oil, and it's also used as livestock feed. And right now, canola production in the Willamette Valley is capped at 500 acres. During this session, legislators were looking to change that and sort of find a compromise. And the reason for this is because canola is a brassica crop. It's part of a large family of plants that includes vegetables like broccoli, cabbage, mustards. And because they share the same family, growing canola near brassicas can lead to like cross-pollination issues, and it can also bring disease and pests. And so there's two sides of this story. You got the grass seed farmers for the most part, and they are the ones that want to grow canola. And that's because they can use it as a rotational crop, which is a practice a lot of farmers can use to basically replenish nutrients back into the soil. And they can also make some extra cash selling that crop, which is it's huge, especially now because the grass seed market is just not doing great. And farmers are looking for alternatives to stay afloat. And then on the other hand, you have the specialty seed farmers. And they're usually smaller vegetable farmers, and they oppose canola. And they say that's because canola is one of those brassica crops in the valley that is grown at a large scale, and most of the varieties are genetically engineered. And they really worry that if that genetically engineered variety cross-pollinates with their own crops, it will alter the purity of their seeds. And if that happens and they're an organic certified operation, they can lose their livelihoods. And that's the main argument. It's something that's been going on for decades.
You had this really interesting story about how Oregon is losing farmland at a pretty rapid rate, especially compared to other states. And then here's this debate about canola, which you just said. People also felt like they were at risk of losing their livelihood. How emotional did this debate get at times?
Totally. On both sides. I mean, like I said, grass seed farmers, they're not in a great spot. 500 acres is not enough. they already have to submit a sort of permit to grow it. And there's only a handful of farmers that can do it since the acres are so limited. Here's a cut from Representative Anna Scharf. She's a Republican from Amity. She said this during a House hearing. And it's worth noting she's a strong advocate for canola. Her husband is a fourth-generation farmer who grows the crop.
These farmers are now scrambling. They are desperate for anything that puts something in the ground to pay the bills.
And also during testimony for a bill that would have extended the cap, a grass seed farmer said she's been waiting on a $100,000 check for over a year for a seed she harvested. And I mean, that just goes to cover the expenses and debt that she owes on her farm. And, you know, she said a lot of farmers are desperate because demand for grass seed is low. And then on, you know, specialty seed farmers say the Willamette Valley is just one of a few places in the world with the right conditions to grow brassica vegetable seeds. And allowing more canola would just unnecessarily put an entire industry at risk. And so those farmers really fear they'll lose their contracts with organic markets, especially if they have a contract with a company that sells seed to countries that ban genetically modified plants. So it's really tough for farmers on both sides. The bill I mentioned earlier, it's House Bill 4059, originally would have expanded the acres to a 2,500 cap. And after that, in 2026, farmers would have been free to grow canola anywhere in the Willamette Valley with some limits, like they had to be a certain distance away from other brassica crops. And they were close on a compromise, but they just couldn't agree on whether to allow genetically engineered canola. And so instead of voting a bill out of committee that could have stalled in the legislature, lawmakers decided to basically keep everything as it is until 2028.
Okay, thank you for that. So the debate will continue. Another bill I found really interesting was this one to study forever chemicals. We hear a lot about forever chemicals these days, I feel like, about how they're in the pans that we cook with and the water that we drink. And apparently, though, this was new to me, they're also in the fertilizer that farmers use?
Right. House Bill 4049, it would have appropriated like something like $740,000 and commissioned Oregon State University to study PFAS or forever chemicals and biosolids from municipal wastewater facilities, or in other words, poop water, or at least the solids that are screened out during the process. And then researchers, they would have looked into how the chemicals break down when applied as a fertilizer in agricultural fields that do not produce crops intended for human consumption. And that's mostly because we're still learning about how these chemicals behave, and scientists just want to know more about how it works and breaks down in agriculture. But that bill stalled in the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, let's do a bit of a lightning round here, because even though it was a short session, lawmakers covered a lot of ground, and there was a lot of legislation that was considered that didn't become law, or things that were worth pointing out here that did become law. So can you guys each give me a quick rundown of, you know, other bills you watched that you think are worth talking about?
Yeah, I'll start. Besides canola, agriculture policy, for the most part, took a backseat this session. Lawmakers have said they will likely revisit the canola issue sooner rather than later. I would just add the Oregon Worker Relief had a couple budget requests. That group works as a fund for immigrant Oregonians who otherwise might not be able to access traditional assistance programs because of their immigration status. The group was asking the legislature to fund one of its programs called the Climate Change Fund, which provides financial relief for farm workers who lose wages if they're unable to work due to extreme heat or wildfire smoke. They were asking for $9 million for that program, but it didn't receive any funding this session. So some farm worker advocates are concerned because that will leave workers in a vulnerable position as we head into the summer season.
Yeah, and then there was a bill that passed that didn't get a whole lot of attention, but I do think it's worth noting, is a bill that kind of address this issue called recreational immunity. So I don't know if you saw some of the news stories, but there were a lot of public trails that were closing this last year. And that happened because of a court decision in which a judge sided with a woman who said that she injured herself while walking on a bridge. It was a public trail owned by the city of Newport, and she broke her leg. And typically, public bodies are protected by some state law that says if somebody is recreating on a public trail, then the public body doesn't need to be held. It doesn't have to be held accountable in a, or it could not be held accountable in a lawsuit. So you can't sue the government agency that owns the public trail. Well, this woman who was using the bridge at that time, when she broke her leg, she said she wasn't recreating. She was walking. She was going from one point to another. And that kind of threw this whole idea of recreational immunity for government agencies into question. And the insurance company that provides liability insurance to local governments basically told them, hey, you need to close down your trails. Otherwise, you could potentially be sued if somebody hurts themselves on your public trail. So they did. A lot of people, a lot of government bodies did close their trails. And a lot of people were going to lawmakers saying, hey, we need to do something about this. We need to keep our public trails open. So lawmakers created this bill as kind of a stopgap measure to temporarily adjust the definition for recreational immunity to include walking. So if you are walking on a public trail, that is now considered recreation. And if you hurt yourself while you're walking on that trail, that's kind of on you. You can't sue the government agency for that injury.
So the trails are all back open.
I don't know if they're all back open, but it sounds like governments can start opening those trails if they feel like they have enough protection. I imagine they will, though.
Okay, good to know. Alejandro and April, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This week's episode was produced by Andrew Thien. Our audio engineer is Nalene Silva, and our music comes from Audio Network. We'll be back next week with more political news from across the Pacific Northwest. Until then, you can find all of OPB's reporting at opb.org. Thank you for your support, and thank you for listening.
Politics Now and OPB's critical reporting from across the Northwest happen only with the support of our members. Do your part now and join us as a sustainer at opb.org/pod.